So thank you all for listening, and we'll open it up to you. Would anyone like to start?
I'll go.
Thank you. All right, Sarah, go right ahead.
Yeah, I think people are going, oh my God, oh, there's Jean. Okay, just, I think a lot of people are wondering about this. You started to touch about on the politics and what's happening in the world between climate-related issues and politics. What are some things we should be looking out for?
Wow, there's a whole number of things to be looking out for.
Is that too many questions? Why don't you pick one and someone else can ask?
Well, no, that's a context. So we'll consider that, and we'll see if people's specific questions might hone in on it. So Jean, why don't you go ahead and go next? Thank you, Sarah. You're still muted, Jean.
Sorry. my question is personal, but may be helpful for the group. You can let me know if it's inappropriate.
That's good. Go right ahead. We'll tell you.
Okay. So the thing about debt is feels right to me, and that is something that we've been trying to be very careful about. We are thinking of financing our mortgage to get a lower rate because the rates are low, but also to add to it because we need to fix our house in various ways, not to renovate and add bathrooms and things, just literally to fix the house because it's falling apart. And I guess I'm feeling I have been feeling nervous about adding to our debt in terms of when we refinance. Is that wise, or is that a good distinction between we're fixing it versus gathering just more stuff for the house?
Thank you. That is a good question, and there's many prongs to that. First of all, let's just answer you personally. Then we're going to generalize some of the things. When we look at you and your husband's name is
Jeff. Mark?
Jeff, thank you. When we look at the two of you, you look like you're still in productive times of your lives. So the ability to cover any increased debt that you might have looks like you still have a good 10 years to be able to do that. So you can, it looks like a reasonable balance. One thing that we would say on a general sense is that we're telling everyone is, one of the misnomers that has been glorified is people say, oh, do the math. And we say, stop exalting it in such a way. If people just used arithmetic, the four basic functions, addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division, you could figure anything out a lot more simply. And yours is a simple pencil equation. So if you have other forms of debt, we would suggest rolling them into your mortgage, so that you lessen your interest rates, because that will be a reasonable calculation. Now, another prong off of your comment. One of the things that has been a real problem in the, say, last 40 years with the advance of young soul mindset that everything is an asset, has been the monetization of everything. Human values cannot really be monetized, but God knows the concept of the marketplace and everything like that has tried to put a dollar or at least a currency equivalence to things. And that has been a really huge mistake, but that has been how the young soul quantifying will really want to try and pigeonhole things. So when you're talking about your house, it's your home. Many people have made the mistake over these years. Granted, for some periods, some people have made money, but you're also seeing the top end of taking and the idea of having your house be an asset instead of your home. Because people have used their property then to go into debt, to do all these things. And they've tried to flip houses and all that. And they've created more dislocation in the society. Because more people have lost than have gained. Even though the current propaganda under capitalism would say, oh, no, no, no. That's not true. Well, it is true. And so much so that you see a growing number of homelessness, and then behind them, a growing number of renters in the world, and a growing number of small corporations actually becoming, you know, larger and larger scale landlords, because you have this concentration. So the asset of a home is now no longer stable because people don't own it. They don't have the security of feeling like it's theirs. And that's an instinctive center thing that a lot of people needed to come to terms with. Now, in terms of debt reduction, Melissa was asking about this. It is really important to understand that this year is going to be very volatile in a lot of the markets. Particularly, and for you, and many of you folks who live within, say, the middle range, the food and credit and fuel and energy sectors are all going to have increasing prices. Now, as those sound, and by the way, rents as well. So for those of you who do own and who do have mortgages, while mortgage rates are still low, because they are appealing more and more to, you know, a higher end who have more security. If you can literally plow your debts into your house and under the lowest rate you can get. If you can pay off debts, however, do that first. And then stop buying stuff that you don't need. You know, that idea of save for a rainy day. Well, there's going to be rain, so to speak, in a financial sense, the rest of this decade. Now, it doesn't mean that there needs to be, you know, terrible tragedy or all of you, you know, walking around homeless in rags. We don't mean that. We, because that would be a scare tactic that would be inaccurate. But enough people out there who are already indebted are on that brink. And that will also bring us to another subject then, of the idea around here of it is in completely and utterly useful to start that whole process of really making sure that your personal security is not only as stable as it can be, but as light as it can be. And when we mean by light, we mean, you know, the amount of stuff that you have to maintain and carry, because you're talking about having to fix your house. That is literally a legitimate thing to do. Renovation is really not a good idea, because wood prices and building materials are also at their highest point in a long time. So, with all those things being said, your strategy and your timing on this is as good as it can be. Now, to the degree to which those of you who have the energy or the ability to earn extra money, if you can, finding ways to do that is advisable. But many of you here, you know, the vast majority of you, you know, in tonight's attendance are all over 50, most of you in your 60s, and a few of you in your 70s. And we might even have a couple of octogenarians, or at least did at one point, but I think she's off the line at the moment. Oh, there she is. So in any case, you know, your ability to earn is impacted because of the fact you also run into another young soul-oriented, call it a barrier, and that is ageism. And besides that, ableism. Now, what do we mean by that? For those of you, we don't mean that any of you who are now old or have a slower body are in any way, quote, disabled or whatever the most politically correct term is. But as a 60 or 70-year-old, your capacity for exertion is less than a 20 or 30-year-old. It just is. And so the anticipation of that, you know, out in the work world is pretty evident. But here's the irony of this year. Most of you in your age groups are the ones who are stepping forward to be willing to go to work. Well, there's a lot of people in the late Gen X age and the early millennial age who are kind of staying back, who are trying to help the evolution into the mature soul era that says, I'm not just going to be a wage slave. That's why you see this progressive increase and resurgence of unionization, of companies figuring out that they're going to get a union unless they start raising employment stability and move away from the gig economy, even though that's still going to be very prevalent in the upper echelons. Now, inflation won't, by the way, Melissa, inflation will not increase the value of money. All it does is it increases the amount of money you need or might have to be paid to buy things.
I know that. Sure.
So yeah, certainly. Anyway,
what I'm saying there, Steve, is that let's say I've got $300,000 on my mortgage. I've got $300,000 in cash, and I can choose to buy a condo and start getting the rent from that condo, or pay off the mortgage, which in a couple of years, that $300,000 is going to be worth even less than it is now, right? So another example, my father sold a ton of land 2 years ago. He's been sitting on that cash this entire time, and it's worth nothing now comparatively, right? Because he didn't buy something with it at the time.
But in
actuality, that's going to continue happening.
This is where
cash just means that it keeps shrinking in what one can do with it. I don't think inflation increases the value of money. I think it decreases it.
Exactly. So, but this is where we would offer you an understanding about something. The cash in hand, or at least a percentage of your cash in hand, is liquid and it's available. When you're talking about relative, fluctuations and the number of people having to go into debt to continue to spend, the idea of investment sounds really great. That's capitalism 101, microeconomic, invest your money and continue. We can tell you that that within two decades, the whole concept of compound interest is going to collapse in on itself. What a person has in hand is going to be what's useful to them in terms of their resources and even in terms of material goods, or material cash to be able to work. Now, you don't have to completely eliminate your mortgage. We're not suggesting that. However, because you are sitting on an asset that has, a comparative value. But we can tell you, we think that real estate markets across the United States are going to take a hit within the next 2 years, because the forced inflation of that land through speculation is going to come to a close. And the real estate bubble that you saw 13 years ago is going to come back again. So it's a nice idea, and that's traditional economic theory, but we don't think it's going to last as long as most people hope it will. And for you in the middle, you will be much more impacted than those at the top who have all these different kinds of financial vapor methodologies, to ensure themselves against these things, derivatives and, those counter contracts, insurance on things, all that kind of stuff that they use to use money against money, where they're not having to put out their exertion and effort. And if one goes bad, they have another instrument to cover their losses. Where the loss has happened, like it did in 2007 and 8 and 9, is the trickle-down effect, the cascading wave of collapse. And in that regard, having as little as you can in debt in general, and then also looking at that, quote, investment property that lost a lot of its surface value, that also people then without incomes can't rent, you would say to yourself, God, I wish I had that cash right now. So keep a chunk of it. Now, if you want to keep it in more liquid instruments, they might not earn as much, but we're telling people, keep some in your house, because it literally will give your instinctive center a sense of something real. And in fact, if you want to do that even more, get some silver coinage, or maybe some gold coinage. and keep it in your house, because those are material objects. And in the case of silver and gold, it's masculine and feminine energy that are also foundational and fundamental to both literally, you know, the metaphysical world, but also to the economic system of the world. Now, Bitcoin, you know, for those of you, if you know how to speculate, go for it. But we would tell you, stay the hell away from digital instruments. They are a fraud from the get-go. Now, granted, there are people making them, making money on them. But remember when we talked about contracts? If you go in and you start actually doing your research beyond the people who are trying to pitch you on, there are several of them besides Bitcoin, may be the best known, but there's a few others out there that are traded as well. What you'll really find is they're mostly international corporations that have clauses that essentially allow you to go in. They call them a wallet. That's hilarious. They can pick your pocket. Those, and they have contracts, and the fine print allows it. And since they're transnational and not in or controlled by any one given country, they are virtually unregulated. So what happens is you get these, you know, rampant speculations where they get up, and then all of a sudden the sellers of these things or the managers of these things go in and pick those pockets, and all of a sudden they crash. Now, as more people get into them, thinking they're really smart, they want to be like the big people and all that, it will sound good. And some people might get out and actually make a profit here and there. But the overall system is a Ponzi scheme. So as far as we're concerned, if you're a good gambler and you know how to do it, go ahead and dabble a little while. But we can tell you, dabbling a little while is all that you're going to be able to do. Because the legal structure of that particular form of currency is completely without, you know, a really true legalistic foundation, let alone it is completely intangible. And that's one of the problems with that kind of inflationary device like the stock market. Granted, the stock market in and of itself, you know, is you buy real companies and so-called instruments. But when you really think about it, as we said, profit is something for nothing. They're getting something, their profits off of the earnings or the work of the workers and so on and so forth. And if that all were to start dominoing, all of that would collapse. And all of those etheric things, these monetary instruments that are based on other monetary instruments, would all start collapsing. That is why having some cash or some real coins could be of really real benefit to you. Not everything. And we're not suggesting you know, put a safe in your house and sit on it with a shotgun. Nothing that, you know, that ridiculous. We are talking about really condensing your material properties and value, things that are of value to you in a way that are useful. Now, we see here that Brad is talking about, having his daughter start a Roth IRA. Some of the basic level banking instruments are still useful, but don't for a minute think that the banking system is going to be nice to anybody. It will be continually to be stabilized because the banking system is, you know, essentially owned and propped up by the Fed, which is propped up by the Treasury. And as long as that's the case, you will have a stabilization factor in this country and in other countries, because most of the big countries on the planet actually have national banks. So having some of those things in operation and under contract where they have FDIC guarantees are at least more stable and at least offer you more protection. Because again, they have legal precedence under that. And when the banking system, was forced to collapse in on itself over the last 10 years and it became more centralized, paying interest rates went down. Why? Because they changed the laws to allow banks to get into investments. And that's a bad thing, by the way. It's great for inflating an economy and it looks great if you're making tons of money off it. But as far as the real structure of things, it is not useful because it spreads everything too thin. Catherine Rose, you have your hand up.
Thank you for all that. I like all that economic, I don't know, strategy. So as an old scholar with a goal of retardation, and so atavism in this lifetime, and my attitude is spiritualist and my mode is power, what might I draw from past lives and all that to be able to do meaningful and purposeful action?
The one thing that we would say for you is that since two of the overlays are your own and they are ones that are native to you, you could find some fluency with that. That is to say, spiritualist and power. As a scholar, however, one of the things that in a moving center year, particularly for a scholar, you can get it is what's called, you know, analysis paralysis, right? is not taking allergy. Now, we also call retardation now reevaluation. And another way we use the term is consolidation. And consolidation then would actually be to your advantage. That is to say, to really say, okay, again, ask the question, you know, what is it I need? And what is it that, you know, it's the server goal. So what is it that most really allows me to have, and in your case, actually creature comforts that really support your health and well-being. And if you have those, we think this year actually will feel fairly stable for you and fairly like you may not be as shaken with the uncertainty as many people will be. Anyway, does that answer your question, or does that give you some sense of answer to your question?
Yeah, it verifies things quite nicely and simply. Thank you.
Oh, very good. You're very welcome. Let's see. I think the whole top row is going. So I see. Let's go, Susan. I think you're up next. Catherine, okay. And then Angela.
Okay. Steve, Michael, you said this is going to be a warrior year.
Yes.
Power mode.
Yes.
100% masculine energy. That feels really comfortable for me.
Yes, yes.
But I'm wondering, with all of this energy, is there a new arc of experience that is coming into manifestation? And are there any old arcs that are just going to disappear? Are we going to move into a different direction? What might they be? And what should we watch for?
Well, thank you for that very exalted question, actually, because that is a big picture kind of thing. The first arc of experience that we were talking to, of course, is that, again, this is only literally the second year that we're declaring that the mature soul arc is starting. You know, the mature soul arc is a 3,000 year experience, right? It is, you know, it took 2,000 years for the old, for the young soul one, and 5,000 years for the baby soul one, and about 10,000 years for the infant soul one. So 3,000 isn't that big a deal. But since you've got a whole ton of human beings here on the planet, and a whole lot less real estate to deal with, there's going to be a lot of nuances. And even though there'll be a lot of growth, there will also be a lot of collapse and stagnation that goes on in during this as you see one paradigm evolve into the next. So that's the biggest arc here, all right? Some smaller arcs, the arc of the environment and the arc of changes in human habitation and consumption in the world. Last year, or in 2020, in the what we called the, you know, the Great Suspension, that assimilative year was what really, you know, froze humanity in place. Obviously, it was done through COVID. COVID said, stop. Look. see if you can take a breath without choking and dying. I mean, that was literally the message, but it was choking and dying, you know, of course, because of disease. But it was, it also issued the entire issue, the entire race, a pause that allowed people to even have a sabbatical from all that they were doing. Now, many of you found that the breaks and the way that they got thrown in, you know, were stunned or at least thrown off, you know, your natural, or at least the flows that you had created for yourself. But many of you later started finding out that there was benefit to this. And one of the benefits that was all over the news is that in the year 2020, environmental pollutants literally dipped by 50% across the globe because people weren't driving anywhere. Factories weren't belching out smoke because they weren't manufacturing as much. And suddenly this realization of, oh, wow, look at how quickly we can affect the mass of the environment. There was even improvement and shrinking of the ozone hole over the South Pole. So what became clear is, and then of course in 2021 and 2020, what also happened is everybody stopped denying that climate change was just a theory. Not even the worst Republican around these days, you know, plays that game. Because simply it is so overwhelmingly obvious. And climate change, ladies and gentlemen, Susan, isn't even the biggest deal. The biggest deal that humanity is going to face is one that is hardly being talked about. And that is, with climate change, what's happening to all the arable land and all the fresh water on the earth to be able to grow food. Many of the places in the world that have arable land have had their topsoil so plowed, so tilled, so overly cultivated that in many places it's basically dirt that has to be infused with industrial fertilizers to get anything to grow in it, which then, by the way, has had an influence on the amount of nutrients in the soil. And since more and more wildlands have been broached into, have been invaded into, and converted into farmlands to try and make up for food production, and usually, by the way, stupid food production, palm oil, oh my God, or sugar plantations. Even though flax is a good thing, because at least it produces fibers and other oils, still as a food crop, it's an indirect thing, and it also takes a good deal of water. The number of things that are going on here, as far as corn. Thank you, Brad. Corn for biofuel instead of food, somehow asserting that that is going to, you know, decrease pollutants. Well, it's ethanol, and it's still alcohol and fossil-based fuels. So, you know, pollutants are still there. They're just different. Now they're just giving some more of the profits to big agriculture. Anyway, one of the beautiful things that is coming out of this is this ramped up set of mature and even late young artisan entrepreneurs and more earth-conscious middle-sized companies really ramping up their production and their activities to invent and to create alternatives not just the human food chain, but also for different ways of manufacturing so that they can deal with the second biggest problem that is hardly ever mentioned, but is mentioned more often, and that is the complete and thorough contamination of microplastics in every part of your environment, in water, in food, in your oceans, in the land, heck, even microparticles in the air that you either breathe, eat, drink, etc. The amount of concentration will eventually come to a point where, you know, the effects. Some of you who know the term the endocrine disruptor will begin to affect, has already in fact begin to affect the reproduction cycles of many animals, but are actually going to come to haunt human reproductive cycles, which is going to be one of the ways of attrition that the earth, so to speak, is going to rebalance itself to actually take out, you know, some of the human population. By the end of the century, you know, by about 2050, the human population will max at about 9 billion. By the end of the century, it'll be down to probably about 3 billion. And through many unfortunate ways, some of which finally will be direct ways where humans will be saying no to reproduction. And it will also look like many that the lifespan of most humans is going to decline, even though technology will be able to help humans stay afloat longer. Only those with the resources to do it will be able to afford it. Anyway, so all of these consciousnesses and all of these balances in nature and are kicking in. The good news is that there's lots to be achieved and gained. The real issue will be, how do human beings under a mature soul arc actively engage in the mutuality factor of the mature soul energy? And mutuality means democracy and some forms of regulated capitalism or socialism. In some places in the world, you will actually see more cooperative communism, because what China and Russia have right now are not communism, they're totalitarianism. And those are completely different animals. Totalitarianism is a political structure. Capitalism, communism, socialism are economic structures, and you can mix and match. But when you have a free, quote, free society, a real democracy, you can actually structure by virtue of the laws, and the ways that, you know, you give ascribe rights and so forth, you can balance these things. And these are also very prevalent in a number of people, but they are not the major power holders, the major brokers either right now. So this year, for the rest of this decade, you can expect to see a lot of contention as that new arc unfolds, and creates chaos, helping to break down and evolve the old one. So we'll pause for a moment and see if we've answered, you know, in a large scope, some of your question.
That was wonderful. Yes, thank you very much.
Certainly, thank you. I think we said, I'm not sure if we said Catherine or Angela next. So let's say eeny, meeny, Catherine, go ahead. And then Angela, you'll be next.
Actually, I think Angela had her hand up first.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you for that. So Angela, go right ahead. And thank you, Catherine. That's very generous of you. By the way, folks, generosity is the more that you actually feel solid and secure, the more generosity you will actually be able to express and actually feel in yourself. So good work, Catherine. Go ahead, Angela.
Hi. Okay. So I know I've spent the last year sort of avoiding a lot of news and avoiding like a lot of political news just for my own mental health. And I can certainly attest to the fact of somebody who, should I even admit this, hit 70 this year, that, you know, my energy has gone down, and I really don't see myself working. I mean, there are some, you know, 70-year-olds that have lots of energy and great for them, but I mean, I don't even think I could do a volunteer job at this point, just because my energy is so up and down, and, you know, I feel like it's not trustworthy. But Rita Moreno said in an interview recently that that she was not, it was a discussion, she said she was not hard, but she is resilient. And so that's kind of like my theme for the year. And I think it goes real well with this whole warrior energy, which I'm not sure how well I will do with, because I find warrior energy really rough on me. And, but I said, yeah, resilience, because that's what I really need to practice this year, in terms of, you know, creating better health for myself and creating a better mental attitude. And so I just, you know, those are just a couple of things I wanted to say. I guess my biggest question at this stage is, in terms of the midterm elections and all the changes that have been made, I mean, how is it looking for those of us who are progressives, or, you know, who really don't want to see us roll into authoritarianism? And I'm really concerned. I'm really concerned about our democracy. I'm really concerned about how I see things projecting into the future, at least in the short term. But, you know, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, there are four major parallels that are up for grabs this year, as far as the direction. Let's start with the worst one first and get that out of the way. That's one thing about a warrior having its nested attitude as cynic, that it always does. Go for the worst case scenario first and start with that. Because if you do, you're actually be covering a lot more bases. And that is that what happens is in the midterm elections, that a lot of people will be turned away. There will be court challenges to a lot of elections. It'll allow for a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't have contested, you know, anything to want to just get. In other words, the same bunch of people, or the same mindset of people, let's call it, that went to the Capitol. You know, it's really unfortunate that these folks can't see the bigger picture themselves, how manipulated they were, and also how really lazy they are in terms of knowing their history, that revolutionaries don't, you know, aren't just armchair, oh, let's take a Sunday drive and, you know, storm the Capitol. No, in many countries, they would have been mowed down, you know, and killed. Now, it just so happens that they acted in a way that, you know, the people of totalitarianism, you know, wanting that concentrate power would do it. By the way, this is exactly what happened in Nazi Germany. The resentment of your average person got rolled into by some of the inflamers of sentiment, you know, Hitler and the Nazis, but also was enabled within the government, like now the Mitch McConnells and the very, you know, call them united, let's call them in lockstep synchrony, you know, Republican Party, many of whom, you know, are exerting no courage. They're just good soldiers, as it were. And they're allowing this to happen. We found it very ironic, but actually somewhat heartening, that the former vice president, who really likes exerting power, an economic one percenter, actually came out and spoke out against Trump and said, "You got to defend the Constitution, not a person." We were astounded that he would say that, and maybe he's, you know, trying to make some kind of political contrition to the way he acted during the George Bush administration and the Patriot Act thing. But nonetheless, I mean, if someone his actually as hard-nosed and extreme is calling out this kind of this radical mob-oriented mentality, and even Mitch McConnell himself, even though he's still doing all the shenanigans, is trying to sound like some voice of reason, then you, and yet is still so extreme, you know how far the spectrum is swung. And at the end of the election, then it would the House and the Senate would go to the Republicans, and then you'll have gridlock until the 2024 election. And not only gridlock, you will have a series of laws come down that will make it extremely difficult for people to vote. The only thing that will prevent that is a number of the Democratic states and legislatures, within their individual bodies. But then again, it'll be interesting because under some Republicans, they want to say, well, our word is national law. And then out of the other side of their mouth, they want to say states' rights whenever they disagree with something. So that, that's what you're facing. Now, the two other parallels is that a lot of you that consider yourself progressive are going to get a lot more moderate and really jump on your elected representatives to get on it and just stick together. And that then bodes better for at least keeping your House and Senate, where they are. There's a lot of people in the rank and file Republicans who are disgusted with the stupid part of the party, the radical ignorance in the party. And they're the ones, by the way, who gave Joe Biden almost a 9 million vote margin. Mm-hmm. I mean, the willingness to people to say he lost in a big lie when their candidate lost by almost 9 million votes, but he actually lost by 3 million votes in the first place and yet won the Electoral College. It's like that's why we said, forget the notion of math. Just stick with arithmetic in all your calculations. De-escalate, stop confusing and obfuscating things by using the big notion of mathematics. A lot of the problems in the world could be solved by just doing arithmetic. When you're talking about statistics and progressions of and so forth, okay, yes, you need higher order mathematics, but it still boils down to a lot of things can be simply weighed out, but they're deliberately confused with percentages or predictions or polling numbers, et cetera, et cetera. They're, people lose track of what those really mean. So the best case scenario then, by the way, is that many Democrats get just as fed up and start actually dishing the Republican voter and the Republican Party just as much polemics as the Republicans dish on them. And there is big room for that. Democrats have been way too passive and way too conciliatory. In a lot of ways, they have been ambiguous. That's the negative pole of the mature soul energy. And Joe Biden, in his methodology, he's a sage in acceptance, and he's a second mature. And frankly, he was the least of the Democrats we thought that should be your president if you really wanted to make progress. But he was granted the best, if you will, kind of unifying candidate given this disparate set of persons. The fact that he's a veteran, the fact that he is a real genuine Catholic, the fact that he is that he lost a wife and two children, the fact that he has been around all the time swayed enough Republican voters to say, I'd rather have that stability than more of this stuff. But the biggest thing that hardly gets talked about, except every once in a while, is the way gerrymandering has gone about.
Yeah.
And that's the second thing, but besides the suppression of voting rights, that is really of concern. From that, that continues to be a real problem. And since most of the court have been packed with conservatives, not just the Supreme Court, and that debacle, but mid courts and the Court of Appeals and things like that, You know, unfortunately, you're liable to lock a lot of this in, regardless of what Democrats do. It's almost going to be, not only are they going to have to get vociferous, but they're going to have to do things like end the filibuster. And they got to do it this year. Matter of fact, you know, the longer the wait, the worse it's going to be. Joe Biden actually has constitutional authority. It's advice and consent of the Senate. It's not approval of the Senate. It's advice and consent. That's the Constitution. Barack Obama got threatened. He could have put the now Attorney General, Merrick Garland, in the Supreme Court when, Mitch McConnell pulled his shenanigan and blocked the nomination. It was well within his legal capacity to do that. And yet that's the kind of grandstanding and going outside really an authoritarian act, or it looks like an authoritarian act, that the Democrats are so shy of doing.
Right.
And yet that's what it's going to be required to counterbalance this tipping of the scales. So, you know, in that regard, it is getting, you know, to where, you know, what's the phrase about, you know, giving them a dose of their own medicine before it's too late. So in any case, that's some of the things that we see on that end.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And by the way, we want to just mention a comment that Janaya made, and we agree with. And this actually has to do with something Melissa was talking about. You know, throughout the country, one of the unfortunate things that has happened under Republican administrations is that there have been these development, just rampant developments of buildings, strip malls, all sorts of things that end up have been completely abandoned in many areas in the country because of real estate prices falling or collapsing. And what happens is they get built on farmland. So you have these buildings that are now just abandoned that nobody's going to tear down, and nobody is going to go back you know, haul away all that garbage to, by the way, take it to what? Overwhelmingly full landfills that once too was usable land. They're not going to do that. They're just going to let stand and be ossified. So it's that building, you know, craze where all of these new, you know, developments, so people could get rich off of the inflationary aspect of real estate, you know, are coming, will come back to bite people. Catherine, and then it looks like Annabelle may be our last questioner. Go ahead, Catherine. Thank you for waiting.
No problem. Thank you. I guess my comments are more like, this has been very illuminating and makes me feel a little bit more hopeful than I probably was earlier. As you know, I've had a pretty challenging last quarter year. Now I know where that originated from.
Yeah.
Boy, it struck full force. It's encouraging, I guess, to feel that the energy is exactly what I've started to do. Like, I started to be proactive. I started to chase it down. I started to do things. I started to make it work. And it felt like we started this new year, like being almost launched from a catapult, to use that warrior imaging.
Exactly.
And it's just all of a sudden, these things that felt like there was just two steps forward, one step back all the time, are now just full speed ahead, and things are getting done and accomplished. The skeletal and the neurological images, wow, like bang on. It's just hoping that there is some successful direction in with that as well, as I deal with these going forward into the year. Being a spiritualist, that aligns with my energy for the first 6 months of the year. But I just wonder if there's any insight. I know it's more personal, but just wondering if That's there okay. was any more insight on that.
For you, you know, it's part of the issue looks like, you know, comes from a sense of having to carry a lot on your shoulders. And by the way, you enjoy some of that. You enjoy carrying a lot of things on your shoulders. But in so far as, you know, your health is concerned, You know, there's a, the disintegration of some of your spinal problems is, in, you know, in part due to your diabetes, you know, having effect on your skeletal structure. But also the fact that, you know, you actually, for a person with your native lightness of being, you actually are really solid and really are willing to dive into heavy vibration things. And one of the things that, matter of fact, thank you for saying this, because your question really begs something that we will have in the written material, but again, we will mention here, is instead of money as your major or first method of evaluating things, ladies and gentlemen, look at vibration. And by vibration, we mean that spiritual sense of expansiveness, that sense of hopefulness, and that sense of integrity it inspires in you, that integration of your own beingness. Sometimes, by the way, a higher vibration may mean a difficult decision. It doesn't mean that they're always going to be fun and light, which is the spiritual, it can be the spiritualist notion of what high vibration is interpreted as, but that's not how we mean it. We mean vibration that it'll remove weight off your shoulders. And for you, finding a way to interact with the world that feels like you can have some more lightness of being, which for your own self first, and then turn your attention with that lightness of being, turning your seriousness into more fun lovingness, even. Even doing serious things will be a way that actually will help your neurology and your physiology, but also make this year feel like that weight is off your shoulders.
Okay.
So.
Thank you. That Certainly. Helps. That's probably accurate.
Well, it's just, you know, we will own what we told everyone last spring when we said the mature soul era is now in swing, is own that it's just our opinion.
Okay. It resonates.
So. Good. And that ultimately is the verification energy of the spiritualist at work. So
thank you.
Certainly. Annabelle, I think we'll probably end with you.
Okay. I was just wondering, do the Michaels have any information for us about the future of COVID?
Good question. Ironically enough, even though this Omicron virus is going to kick the hell out of everybody until about June, the psychology of COVID is changing. First of all, the SARS-2 virus, which underlies COVID, is becoming endemic to the human population, meaning it's going to be part of you. Now, even though a big minority of the human race, approximately about 40%, is not going to be vaccinated against this thing, they're just not going to do it, there will be enough cases and enough survived cases and enough vaccinations that the occurrence of and the severity of COVID will translate into people's mindset that it's no longer as big a deal, and it will go back to more business as usual. Okay. Now,
and will it really be no longer as big a deal?
It's going to be as prevalent as tuberculosis once was, but everybody went on with their life with tuberculosis, right?
Right.
Yeah. So we're talking about the mindset toward this. Now, the SARS viruses strain are out there. They've been getting uncovered in the tundra. They've been getting uncovered as we've been cutting down forests, and they've been combining. You know, this COVID is the first big one. You know, the first, you know, SARS-1 was what, the bird flu back in, you know, whatever, 2000, and then the swine flu. Earlier than that. So this was the first one. So guess what? It's not going anywhere, but it is going to evolve. And within about another 6 to 10 year period, you're going to have another major pandemic. And this time it's going to kick the hell out of people. because a lot of those people who aren't vaccinated but who managed to skirt it this time are going to get it, and they're going to go. The next group after that, those of you who have been, and especially who have had the mRNA vaccines, it has introduced a string of an RNA that now will recognize all future COVIDs, and so you will be lesser affected by it, even though those other COVIDs will also have devastating effects. But in this year, the other thing that has happened related to COVID is a big majority of the population, even those who dislike the whole idea, are starting to adapt to the notion of wearing masks. And that social evolution is something that's going to happen and is pretty much spread around the globe. And by the way, most of Asia, Japan, China, Korea.
They've been wearing masks for years.
Exactly. Decades, in fact.
Yeah.
Have been doing this. So as it's spread westward, so to speak, and now, and many of them did it because of the industrial pollution, not because of disease per se, but as it spreads right now, more and more people will be wearing that, and that will add a level of protection. What is the other social thing that will be weird is that a lot of you have adopted the social distancing mechanisms, and we're somewhat wise to do so. You know, I mean, like keeping distance from folks, but in finding your allies and your loyalties, this concept of team, you know, or quarantining is a good thing. So that, you know, you select out your group of peoples that you do have contact with, and you're liable to, you know, minimize any of your risk, not necessarily of getting the disease, because this Omicron virus is so easy to get, but it's a lot for vaccinated people, it's a lot less likely to be deadly. So anyway, that's about COVID. So about the second half of the year, when we talked about this change, that we're seeing that there are a lot of the legal restrictions that were out there are likely to be lifted. And a lot of people will be feeling like they can go back to, you know, more of a normal lifestyle. And in fact, they will be. It won't be that the disease will be gone. People just won't care that it's not gone as much. So, well, folks.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Annabelle. Thank you for the excellent question. Well, folks, thank you very much for being here tonight. Well, I want to remind you that we will be doing quarterly updates. So we will see you again and advertise the next group for sometime in the beginning part of April. And we'll explore the year up to that point and some of the things that we have seen and how things are unfolding. And we'll be there to field your questions further. But for tonight, we want to say thank you very much for attending. We wish you all the most hearty warrior belly laugh and sage lighthearted humor that you can manifest. And bring to bear on this year, because the more that you can do both, the more that you will find yourself emboldened, empowered, and resilient, and able to deal with many of the things that indeed are frightening out there, but that don't have to be completely crippling by any matter. So again, thank you all very much for coming. And we will say good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Thanks,
good night, Steve.
Everybody.
Good night,
everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
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 Bye, Sarah. Bye, Catherine.
Good night.
Bye, Catherine.
Steve, do you remember the ascension or here for the duration?
Exactly. Yes. Yes, indeed.
That was 25 years ago.
Yep. And so we're here for the duration, Lori. Hi, Brad.
We're here for the duration.
We're here for the duration. All those who didn't escape or who didn't get off on another
parallel Nexus have still not come down to get me, Steve.
That's right, right. Let's blame Essence. That's it. Essence, where are you? You've been me. Good night, everybody.
It's so good to see you.
Thank you again.
Nice seeing you, Mary.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Bye-bye.